Multi protocol label switching. It's a standards approved end-to-end circuit technology that speeds up network traffic flow and makes it easier to manage. Multi-protocol label switching provides a mechanism for forwarding packets for any network protocol. The predecessor of MPLS was IPLC, International Private Leased Circuit, a point-to-point private line used by an organization to communicate between geographically dispersed offices throughout the entire world. So, IPLC, MPLS has been again converted into IPLS. So IPLC has become changed to MPLS based on the mechanism that was getting followed for forwarding of packets of a network. MPLS has an edge over IPLC on this front since it provides network administrators the ability to set the path traffic and will take through the network and set performance characteristics for a class of network. So characteristics of the performance will be monitored and they will be controlled by the network administrators in case of MPLS, whereas in IPLC, there is no such option for users to, for the administrators to do that. Next comes the Voice over Internet Protocol, VOIP. So, MS Teams is one of the things that is using my Voice over Internet Protocol. WhatsApp is another thing that is using this particular thing. It's a technology used for delivering different kinds of data from a source to a destination using IP. That data may be in many forms, including files, voice communication, pictures, fax, or multimedia messages. VOIP is most often used for telephone calls, which are almost free of charge. So, telephone calls where we are having this particular thing. In fact, our VoLT is one more thing that is being used by multiple network people where voice can be shared over internet. Data is more secured and faster with private networks, but the costs are very high. For the purpose of a communication system with very low cost, VoIP was introduced. This technology provides fast and high quality voice communication all over the world. Next, let us discuss about internet and office services. There are three types of application deployment briefly explained below. Internet is the deployment of applications information that the organization wishes to make available for everyone in the external world. It uses protocols such as HTTP, FTP, HTTPS, SMTP and is available to everyone everywhere. FTP is file transfer protocol, SMTP is small message transfer protocol and HTTP is intranet are those that deploy applications on HTTP or FTP but available only to company internet employees. Though the applications are on a web browser, they are not available to the open world. Only the people who are having access and only the people who are inside the organization will be in a position to use an intranet. Extranet is intranet application extended to select outside users such as the company's partner organizations. Full access is available from within the firewall and limited access outside the firewall to select organizations who are business partners. Say, for example, you are having a chat mechanism where the other, where your company's partner will be in a position to connect and get an support. That becomes an extranet. Whereas in an intranet, the people inside the organization only can work. Common Windows Server concepts includes starting from the VMS platform many years ago, Microsoft Windows NT and its subsequent versions have become a key part of network operating systems that provide for a number of built-in services such as below. Some of the item servers which are there are file and print servers, allow sharing of files and printers across the network. Like sometime back we were mentioning, the printer can be, you will be in a position to print something in the server. Sorry, print something in your printer which is there in the office by sitting at home, and that is helped by the file and print servers that are there. DNS and WINS services allow the admin to configure DNS, domain naming service, and net BIOS name resolution. So what will happen is that when you are having an IP number for using over the internet, say yahoo.co.in which you are going to use, or google.com, basically this is nothing but an IP number. So by the DNS, your system will be in a position to identify where it exactly it is trying to reach. So DNS will be the name that has been given for the IP number. DHCP services allow the admin to configure the server to assign IP addresses to clients of the network. So when you are going to have the single location where IP address has to be assigned to respective thing, DHCP services will be used. By the DHCP services, what will happen is that system will be given an IP address automatically. There is one more way in which IP address can be assigned, by giving a static address. Directory services to build a central list of objects such as user accounts that authorize user login, commonly known as Microsoft Active Directory. Using an Active Directory, users will be logged in using Active Directory. User can be added in Active Directory, and there are services that can be used from utilities that can be used from the Microsoft Active Directory for authentication of the respective user for respective applications also. These kind of things are available in the directory services today. Web services to build and operate internet services that is being used for web services are used for operating the internet services. It could be an internet or internet services. Email services to configure a server to send or receive emails using SMTP. This feature also helps application developers to build in email into applications. So the services and features, SMTP servers can be used for sending messages, emails outside, and applications can be configured using the services of SMTP to send emails based on the trigger that is happening in the respective applications. Group policies allow the admin to deploy the settings down to the client operating systems from a central server. So what will happen is that there could be a single policy for the entire organization. With the central server support, group policies can be pushed from the central location. The admin people can push this entire rules into the location, into policies to the location from sitting in the central server. By this, admin can apply organization's common setting on all client machines, example folder redirection, file permission, user rights, and installation of software and updates. So like example, when you are talking about an organization, antivirus is one of the important thing which will be covering at the stage of the chapter. So when this user, the antivirus is going to be updated on a frequent basis. So whenever there is an upgrade that is happening on the antivirus, this will be pushed from the central server to individual machine. Directory services holds a list of users that are allowed to log into the network, and user rights for each of these and information on the users. When a user tries to log into the network from any client machines, the login request is sent to the directory server database that verifies the credentials and processes or rejects the attempt to log in. Servers can perform multiple roles. It can function as a file server as well as provide directory services. So that is a difference that is happening in the past, that servers can have multiple file server also it can happen, directory service also it can happen. Using the directory services, since you will be in a position to control who can log in into the system. Next, let us move on to the next important discussion for the chapter, data centers. So like we were discussing earlier also, data center is a centralized repository, either physical or virtual, for the storage, management and dissemination of a data and information organized around a particular body of knowledge or pertaining to a particular business. So any organization, if it is large, it requires a specific data center. Without a data center, we will not be in a position to control the flow of data from multiple places to different places. So it will be like it will be having multiple servers will be there, multiple network connections will be there, hubs will be there, routers will be there, and people will be there to work on the data center. By the very term data center, one presumes that they are a central repository of data, meaning information. However, in computer terminology, data includes not just information but also the software, that is the programs that process the data. A private data center may exist within an organization facility or may be maintained as a specialized facility. Every organization has a data center, although it may be referred to as a server room or even a computer close. So the private data centers are there, and it could be inside the organization or outside the organization, or there are third party data centers also there, which we'll be seeing here. In that sentence, data center may be synonymous with network operation center or NOC. A restricted access area containing automated systems that constantly monitor server activity, web traffic, and network performance. So NOC will be in a position to control the access, the web traffic, and network performance will be monitored from here. The data center is the Achilles heel of IT operations, and hence any discussion of on enterprise solutions is incomplete without stressing the importance and critical aspects of a data center. So let us look at what are the critical aspects of data center, how it has to be controlled, how access has to be controlled. The data that this user process by executing computer programs update not only the primary data center, but in real time update two or more disaster recovery data center sites. Like we are mentioning, there will be a near data center, there will be data center, there will be a data recovery center. So all trends that is happening in the primary data center will be updated in all the cases, all the three or four servers that will be there. There could be multiple data centers also. So in such a scenario, if the primary data center goes down for whatever reason, the user will be blissfully unaware of such an event as he, she is not affected in the least. So there are cases where instantly the data center is being pushed from data center to the disaster recovery center. There are cases where there are other kinds of things also that will be happening, which will be smaller data center where primary things are getting stored and which will be used only for specific transactions also. So it will not be very huge in number space, but it will be smaller, and it has a less storage, and it will be used at the time of EOD, BOD of branches of a bank also. That is the kind of data center is also there. Disaster recovery is one of the important element in a data center. When designing a data center, we choose reliable equipment, components, and technology, but eventually every system fails. So irrespective of whichever is the highest quality systems you are going to do, there is a possibility that it can fail. Business often have a secondary data center used mostly for backup. So what will happen is that the secondary data center will be used for taking backups also. From primary data center will be given again for operation of transactions, and secondary data center will keep doing a backup. This facility can take on responsibility in the case of a primary data center failure, but the recovery time will depend on business requirement like cost, distance between data centers, application criticality, and scope of the recovery. Example of bank, things like bank where you are going to have 24/7 transactions that is supposed to happen. Disaster recovery centers are required to be there, and it should be in a position to instantly come up, bring up, bought up for creation of transactions. There are cases, there are banks which are having an instant automatic data DR site movement without actually the end user will not be aware that whether they are using from data center or are they working from data recovery site. Highly critical applications require less downtime and less data loss. For that reason, a disaster avoidance solution might be a better option for businesses with many high critical applications. Disaster avoidance. Early action can be taken to protect business critical applications from failure, thereby avoiding downtime and data loss. So this is a critical, this is an important thing that has to be given, that has to be done by the maintenance people to ensure that downtime is not there, data loss is not going to happen. Three critical elements play a key role in disaster avoidance. First, you need to know that a disaster is coming. Second, the two facilities should be close enough to perform live migration, or what VMware calls vMotion. Third, the data link carrying the application workload between data centers must be big enough to carry all the memory pages involved in the live migration of the virtual machines. Many other technologies can be included to support a seamless user experience during disaster avoidance. IP localization, clustering, inbound traffic optimization, and load balancing are just a few. So load balancing we have to discuss here. When there are multiple people connecting to their respective server, there is a possibility that the server utilization is going high. In these cases, the load balancer will come into picture and ensure that the network, the usage is happening continuously without much disturbance, and one server is not carrying a bigger load. Next kind of data center is active data centers, where what will happen is that same data center, the same application will be run from two different applications also. So what will happen is that this particular thing benefits the bank in sharing the load. Sorry, benefits the organization in sharing the load. Rather than running all applications in one data center with another for backup, some business choose the option to distribute applications to more than one data center. Both are considered as active-active data center model because the two data centers are actively used to and resources are not sitting idle. Data loss and recovery time are expected to be zero or near zero. So partial applications will be running from one data center, other applications will be running from second data center. By this, what will happen is that the utilization of both the servers will be happening and will not something own particular server will not be idle. The design of an active-active model is different from a compute storage application and network services standpoint than a traditional design. Replication, stretch clustering, scale-out design, IP localization, layer 2 extension, load balancing, and state synchronization are the main characteristics of an active-active data center design. Only challenge which has to be taken care in this case of active-active data center is that when some one specific server is going to go down, they have to ensure that which has gone down and what has been replicated properly. If wrong replication is happening, then it will create a bigger mess. RPO and RTO are the primary things for to be considered in a data center. We have data loss and recovery time is as well as RPO. Okay, in RTO, the recovery time objective is a time it takes application to come back up after the planned or unplanned failure. So this should be very minimal, considering the seriousness of or the importance of the specific industry and how much time it is going to work. Say 24 by 7, if it is going to be the server has to be up, then it becomes very, very important. Okay, but if it is going to be on the what you call this 8 to 8 kind of this thing, then it is relatively lesser thing. Accordingly, the RTO, RPO has to be planned by the respective data center. For example, the RTO should be very, very minimal, like industry, like a banking. Backup technologies can be used to avoid data loss, but replication technologies at the host application or storage level are also used to decrease RPO. To support active-active data centers, avoid the traffic hairpinning and provide read-write capability to storage, you may need to implement a solution specific to your storage environment. Latency should be within the limit of the replication solution to avoid poor application performance. So if the latency is on the higher side, the application will not perform at all, application will not be responding at all. So latency should be very less. The latency again depends on multiple factors. The performance of an application depends on multiple factors. Poor coding or poor network or poor database architecture may result in more latency. So next, let us discuss about different one more important element in a data center: east-west and north-south traffic. Application residing in the data center can be built in many tiers. Three-tier application architecture is well known and commonly implemented by developers. Applications may interact with services such as Active Directory, DNS, Domain Name Services, and DHCP, and also can interact with other applications. When web servers talk with application servers or application servers talks with the database servers, these interactions are example of an east-west traffic pattern. So what will happen in a normal application or normal environment in a bank, in an organization is that there will be a web server. Web server will be outside, web server will be there, app server will be there, and application server, and sorry, and database server will be there. Web server will not be in a position to directly connect to a database server, because web server will be outside the control layer. So a user will not be directly speaking to application server, but the user will be connecting to the web server. Web server routes the entire thing to the application server. Application server will be having the functional logic. The functional logic will be written, will be doing the activity, and it will be connected to the database server on the need basis and sent back the response to the user through the web server. So these interactions are called as an east-west traffic pattern. Applications can be accessed from campus networks, branch offices, the WAN, or the internet. In these cases, applications are considered to be to the south. So the communication is defined as north-south. So whatever is happening outside the campus network or branch offices, the WAN, or the internet is called as a north-south access communication. Leaf and spine architecture. The leaf and spine network architecture or distributed core was developed to allow traffic to scale and to travel in east-west routes in addition to the more traditional north-south patterns. In general, leaves are not connected to each other and spines are not connected to each other. So it is like our spines which are getting connected and leaves that are going to be connected. So two leaves will not be connecting to each other and spines will not be connecting to each other. For specific and critical workloads, leaf devices can be connected to each other, providing even lower latency. So this is the reason leaf here in this cases there will be connected also in if it is critical, if specific critical workloads are there. Cisco recently announced that its ACI fabric uses VXLAN tunnels on top of leaf and spine architecture with the Nexus 9000 series switches. Next comes the important topic of database enterprise data storage. Without a proper data storage, applications cannot run. So storage often does not get the attention it deserves, which can turn out to be a costly oversight. If data storage is not maintained properly, it becomes a very costly oversight for the organizations. Though storage is not often given enough attention in system architecture, but it can make or break the service level agreement for your application response time. So if data is not getting maintained properly or planned properly, there is a possibility that the entire organization can break down. Today we get a few gigabytes of main memory, a few terabytes of hard disk, a small backup flash drive of a few terabytes for a couple of 100 rupees and laptops with flash drive of 1 TB. These significant advancements in storage devices, but in case of any organization, large organization like banks, okay, the gigabytes or terabytes will not be enough. They require in bigger values, bigger this thing. And unfortunately, today the storage values are going less and they are in a position to manage it properly. To meet the escalating demand for for data-sensitive graphics, web transactions, and other digital firm applications, the amount of data that companies need to store is doubling every 12 to 18 months. So, the huge volumes of trends are happening today, and it is like I'm having 100 GB today. After 12 or 18 months, I may be requiring 400 GB. That is the way it is moving ahead. Companies are turning to new kinds of storage infrastructure to deal with the complexity and most cost of mushrooming storage requirements. In direct attached storage devices are connected directly to individual servers and must be accessed through each server, which can create bottlenecks. So direct attached storage area networks and network attached storage are the three basic types of storage. One is DAS, direct attached storage, second is SAN, storage area network, and NAS. DAS is the basic building block in a storage system. This is where the entire block is getting stored. Next is SAN. NAS is the highest layer of storage. And SAN is somewhere between the DAS and NAS. Direct area storage is the most basic storage subsystem that provides block level storage, and it's the building block for SAN and NAS. DAS is limited to a particular host and can't be used by any other computer unless it's presented to other computers over a specialized network called a SAN or a data network or a NAS storage server. So for accessing DAS, without a SAN, you will not be in a position to access DAS. Redundant arrays of inexpensive RISC, RAID, was coined in an era of single large expensive drives. There are several types of RAID, but the concept is the same. An array of disk composed of various size stripes of usual redundant data. This increases speed and vault tolerance. If you can go and see a data center where this is getting stored, you will be in a position to easily understand how exactly it is getting maintained. It will be small blocks or small stripes that are going to be there in this thing, so which will be having redundant data, which means that whenever there is a data that is getting written, it will be written in the RAID way, which results in speed increases, speed and fault tolerance will be on the higher side when RAID is getting used for storing the data. Storage area network offer a high level of functionality than DAS because it permits multiple host server computers to attach to a single storage device at the block level. Because a SAN offers blockable storage to the host, it fools the application into believing it's using a DAS storage subsystem, which offers a lot of compatibility advantage. Storage networks go a step ahead of NAS by placing multiple storage devices on a separate high-speed network dedicated to storage purposes. The SAN creates a large central pool of storage that can be shared by multiple servers so that users can rapidly share data across the SAN. Through SAN, users will be in a position to share data across multiple servers. Next comes a network-attached storage, attaching high-speed RAID storage devices to a network so that the device in the network can access these storage devices through a specialized server dedicated to file service and storage. The benefits of a NAS over a SAN and DAS is that multiple clients can share a single volume. Various SAN or DAS volumes can be mounted by only a single client at a time. So, this is a benefit of network-attached storage. It is above on top of SAN. As a result, the control or the benefits will be better than SAN or DAS. Many modern NAS applications will support SAN technologies like ISCSI, and you can basically build your same hybrid storage solution using a general purpose operating system like Linux, BSD or Windows using your own hardware. Storage management. The term storage management encompasses the technologies and process organizations used to maximize to improve the performance of their data storage resources. It's a broad category that includes virtualization, replication, mirroring, security, compression, traffic analysis, process automation, storage provisioning, and related techniques. So nowadays, automation has increased and improved to that much extent that the entire storage is automated, and it adds this whenever it is required for bigger storage. The benefits of this approach include lower costs, both at one-time capital expenses associated with storage devices, and the ongoing operational costs for maintaining those devices. Storage management technologies such as replication, mirroring, and security can help a data center improve its reliability and availability. The primary organization involved in establishing storage management standards is the Storage Networking Industry Association. This is where the entire storage-related protocols has been defined. SMIS defines the attributes of storage hardware such as fiber channel switches, fiber channel, SK arrays, NAS devices, tape libraries, and host profiles. It also addresses storage management software issues such as configuration discovery, provisioning and trending, security, asset management, compliance and cost management, event management, data protection. The CDMA specification provides standards for cloud storage services, enabling interoperability among various storage management solutions. Emerging technologies in storage devices. The past 5 years has seen the emergence of big data, and along with it, an exponential data deluge. Storage manufacturers have been pushed to provide new technology to keep the data flowing. To manage such large data volumes and growth, storage manufacturers are working on newer ways to increase storage density, that is, store more information, less space. So, as a result, the storage is the place where the new innovations are continuously happening. The other challenge is, while CPUs have become faster, storage has not been able to keep up. Many innovative new technologies have come up that could drastically impact data storage in a positive manner. Some of these are 3D NAND, a type of flash memory in which the memory cells are stacked vertically in multiple layers. Flash manufacturers develop 3D NAND to address challenges they encountered in scaling 2D or planar 3D NAND technology to achieve higher densities at a lower cost per bit. So, next kind of data protection that is getting evolved in the current, in the near future or near past is that a method of data protection in which data is broken into is erasure coding. Here, what is happening is that data protection is happening by data is broken into fragments, expanded and encoded with redundant data pieces and stored across a set of different locations or storage media. The goal of erasure coding is to enable data that becomes corrupted at some point in the storage process to be reconstructed by using information about the data that is stored elsewhere in the array. So, combination of all these particular items, the different data that is stored in different locations, system will be in a position to reconstruct the entire thing once again. Some of the other data storages are helium drives, type of hard disk that leverages the lightness of helium gas to increase the medium's potential speed and storage density. potential speed and density are increased because helium, which is less dense than air, creates less drag and turbulence. Shingled magnetic recording is being used. It is a new technology in hard drives that allows the tracks on a platter to be laid on top of each other, just like roof shingles on a house, to increase platter density or tracks per inch. The end product physically looks and feels like a standard PMR drive with higher capacity in the same physical footprint. However, the architecture change means the user experience from a performance perspective will be dramatically different. Next is NVM fabrics, a storage technology specification designed to enable non-volatile memory, executed message-based commands to transfer data between a host computer and their target solid state storage device SSD, or any system over a network. 3D XPoint is another NVM technology jointly developed by Intel and Micron Technology Inc. This technology is expected to fill a gap in the storage market between dynamic RAM and NAND flash. Heat-assisted magnetic recording, HAMR, considered the next big leap forward. This is a magnetic storage technology for drastically increasing the amounts of data that can be stored on a hard disk drive by temporarily heating the disk material while writing on it. Containers. Enterprise class container management will become at par with virtual machine management. Software design resources such as storage will be delivered mostly in containerized form. Machine learning algorithms are being used for this purpose, can produce storage management process that can learn and adjust operations and settings to optimize workload services, quickly identify and fix the root cause of abnormalities, if any, and broker storage infrastructure and manage large-scale data to minimize cost. What are the next emerging technology in storage devices? That's what we'll look into now. Management as a service concept gaining quick traction. Data storage technology. Every storage array may come with built-in call home support replete with management analytics and performance optimization. This can result in cloud-hosted MaaS, MaaS offerings to enable data centers to manage their hybrid architectures and move away from on-premises management software. All VMware has rolled out several cloud management services that are basically online versions of familiar on-premises capabilities. Unified communications. Next point of discussion will be unified communications. It is an integration of real-time communication services such as instant messages, presence information, telephony, video conferencing, desktop sharing, data sharing, calls and call control and speech recognition with non-real-time communication services such as unified messaging. Unified communication systems generally enable companies to use integral data, video, and voice in one supported product. Unified communication systems typically include the means to integrate real-time or near real-time unified messaging, collaboration, and interactive systems. Like when some person is calling through a call center, he will be in a position to get a real-time data through unified communications. Is known by many names: collaborative communications, unified communication collaborations, UCC, and information communications technology, ICT. Unified communications is defined differently depending on the industry experts you speak to. What was one telecommunications has evolved to encompass all forms of communication from messaging to web conferencing. As current technology improves and new technology enters the marketplace, the components of unified communications are also developed. Some of the unified communications that are being used are Internet Protocol, IP. Telephony has become a critical part of unified communications technology as enterprises move on from traditional phone service and use the internet to deliver voice, fax, or other forms of communications. IP telephony takes advantage of the internet to deliver phone calls. IPT takes advantage of the internet to deliver phone calls, while VoIP is a transport mechanism used to manage voice communications over IP. So if you go to any data center or a data center where you are going to have a call center place, you can see mini VoIPs that will be there, which will be used as a phone. And here IP telephones are being used for the purpose of discussing with multiple people. So this is again transferred through the LAN itself. This is what we call as VoIP. Presence technology makes it possible to locate and identify a computing device when the user connects to the network, regardless of the device location. Unified messaging The term unified communications was ultimately derived from unified messaging. Messaging technology include email, voicemail, faxes and instant messages. From audio to conferencing is used for audio to web to video. Conferencing has evolved as newer technologies emerge. Conferencing allows to for greater mobility and presence of foreign enterprise. So today conferencing, people are using Zoom for conferencing, MS Teams for conferencing, and in the COVID, after the COVID scenario, these particular things had has evolved, and what has happened is that multiple companies started using these particular things just for work from home itself. Next comes the network security. It is a specialized field in computer networking that involves securing a computer network infrastructure. So just like how you are going to secure the information security, network security also comes into picture, where you are going to ensure that the network is secured from other people to other malicious attempts to be stopped from there itself. Is typically handled by network administrator or system administrator who implements a security policy. Network software or hardware needed to protect a network and resources accessed through the network from unauthorized access, and also ensure that employees have adequate access to the network and resources to work. It is like who is supposed to access will get an access, who is not supposed to access will not get an access. Effective network security targets a variety of threats and stops them from entering or spreading on your network. So what are the threats to my network? So if recently one specific bank, foreign bank, has told that in a day they are getting more than around 1 lakh 1 lakh threats or 1 lakh threats to try and connect to their network, which is getting solidly being supported by the network security. Many network security threats today are spread over the internet. The most common include viruses, worms or Trojan horses, spyware and adware, zero-day attacks, also called zero-hour attacks, hacker attacks, DOS, denial of services attacks, data interception and theft, and identity theft. So how does this network security work? Protecting corporate information and technology assets from intruders, thieves and vandals is a significant challenge for all enterprises. Investments in security technology are made to implement technologies that can support the centralized management and enforcement of security policy. No single solution protects you from a variety of threats. You need multiple layers of security. The software must be constantly updated and managed to protect you from emerging threats. A network security system usually consists of many components. Ideally, all components work together, which minimizes maintenance and improves security. How does network security work? In identity management, so to have a summarized view of this complex or this specific chapter, is the security management may be summarized in the following four solutions. One is identity management, to identify who is trying to access the system. Vulnerability management, whether the person who is trying to manage, how exactly he is trying to reach our system. Threat management, is there any threat in the connection he is trying to do? And trust management, whether we can trust the person who is trying to access our solution.